The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Riverfront. This is episode number 454 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast, where we discuss the Cincinnati Reds and occasionally Luis Quiñones. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me this week, is we've sort of talked back and forth about doing this. We finally sat down and picked a date. Excited to have the broadcaster for the Daytona Tortugas, Reds High single-A team. Army women's basketball and other things. We're going to touch on as much of that as we can. Justin Rock, how are you today, Justin?
I'm doing fantastic, Chad. Thank you so much for taking the time to have me on. I really appreciate it and looking forward to it. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in what you do, and I know that a lot of our viewers are going to be interested as well. I want to just kind of mention the first time that we met in person. You know, we'd sort of got to know each other a little bit on Twitter there, but the first time in person, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, it was in Johnson City, Tennessee. Is that where it was?
That is correct. Greenville Reds against the Johnson City Cardinals in the original iteration of the Appalachian League. Yeah, for sure.
That's right. In that old ballpark, Cardinals Park in Johnson City. And what occurred to me at that time was, and this is something maybe you can talk about, because I'm not sure people really quite understand, was all the work and the preparation that it took from you to, but before the game, to get ready and then to actually broadcast the game and all the moving parts. I'm glad he's doing it, because it's people just think, oh, you sit down behind a microphone and talk about baseball for 3 hours, and man, it's way more than that. So can you just kind of give us an idea what the day-to-day life is for you as a broadcaster?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a lot different in the minor league baseball realm for me than I would say, you know, it is in the off season when I'm freelancing doing basketball and other sports. But you know, in baseball, I'm doing media relations in addition to doing the play-by-play stuff, and so I'm doing a lot more than just broadcasting. As you said, you know, I'm getting to the ballpark and making sure, you know, game notes are ready to go. We've got stat packs for the coaching staffs and for any media that might show up at the ballpark that day, getting lineups, producing any sort of material for fans, you know, printing rosters, keeping your eyes peeled on emails for things like roster moves, and you know, maybe there's a press release that needs to go out about something in regards to maybe an upcoming homestand or an upcoming promotion. So there's all those kinds of things moving on, going on, you know, generally from the time you get into the office until about like maybe 3-4 o'clock. And then, you know, the closer you get to game time, you know, you start more and more focusing your attention on, you know, what's going on with the game, getting lineups, making sure lineups are printed and, you know, are available to whoever necessarily needs them on a game day basis. Make sure it gets to whoever needs it on the concourse, as the lineup's up, so the fans know what's going on. And then, you know, getting interviews, making sure you have some content for the pregame show and things like that. And then, you know, the job isn't done. Also, when the game is over, you know, we're running off box scores for coaches, so they can see that right in the post-game recap, you know, cleaning up the press box, making sure everything's, you know, locked up in the stadium when the team's at home and things like that. So it's a never-ending kind of a cycle of different kind of things around the ballpark, around the stadium, that goes into being a broadcaster and media relations person in minor league baseball, a lot more than, you know, just what goes on between the first and final pitch.
Yeah, and I'm glad you sort of explained all that, because I did a huge disservice, frankly, to you as in the introduction by just saying broadcaster, because that's the glamorous part. And if you get a chance and you can listen to Justin call the games, thanks to the interwebs, you should, because you can tell when a broadcaster has put in that preparation work, and is not just going through the motions. It's obvious because it's a hard job if you don't put it that time. But yeah, when it comes to certainly what you're doing now with Daytona is it's a one-stop shop in some ways for media relations. And it's I imagine it's a huge time intensive job. I imagine it's also fun at times, but also it's gotta be a serious workload.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. You know, it definitely takes a lot of time. You know, I like to joke a lot of times with people that for the most part during the minor league season, it's sort of get up, go to work, come home, go to sleep, and very much sort of that kind of routine a lot of times. But it is a lot of fun because, you know, the old theory is, you know, beats the daylights out of, you know, sitting in a cubicle at an office day in and day out. You know, I'm staring at a ballpark in Florida. You know, got this beautiful view of the bridge and the Halifax River, and you know, you're right off the Atlantic Ocean, all this kind of stuff. So it definitely is exhausting and time intensive between, you know, getting ready for the play-by-play, making sure you're prepared and you've got all your research done so you know what you're talking about when the lights are on, but also making sure all the different things are taken care of on a day-to-day basis, and also making sure you know, you're doing right by the fans and getting video out there, especially for us down in Daytona. We don't have MILB TV, so any sort of, you know, footage we can get out there of the players and the prospects and the talent we have coming through there so you, the fans, can see it as well and follow their success and follow their careers. You know, that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, it takes some time, but it's a labor of love.
Yeah, no question. It has to be. It has to be to do it well. I can't imagine someone. You can't just go through the motions, I guess is what I'm saying. Let me ask you this, because I want to kind of get into how you got, because I know this is a question that a lot of people have. How do you get into this this racket, quote unquote? How do you start? And so you did it in college, right? You started in college with you were Penn State, is that right?
Yeah, I'm a Penn State grad. Went to Penn State, but I knew this is what I wanted to do before I went to college. You know, the old joke and the old story I like to tell people is, you know, growing up, you know, in a Jewish family in the Northeast, you know, New York City, New Jersey area, my dad had to sit me down when I was young and be like, well, you know, the 5'8 Jewish kids, 9 times out of 10, did not grow up to be Derek Jeter. You know, you get your Alex Bregmans thrown in there, but I was not blessed with his physical gifts. So, you know, as a young kid, my running theory was, well, if I wasn't gonna get paid to play, might as well get paid to watch. And that's sort of how the dream got started. And I was an only child, so I was calling games. You know, I was playing video games in my basement, you know, playing you know, MVP baseball back in the day and Madden, all that kind of stuff. So I was, you know, playing against computer and calling, you know, the game I was, you know, playing off the screen, you know, and calling games off, you know, TVs. And when my baseball career ended, I started doing PA for my high school baseball team. And that was, you know, my first gig, and started doing stuff at Penn State and met some folks at Penn State, led me to an internship working 2 years in the Cape Cod Baseball League with the Bourne Braves. My first, you know, interview with somebody was with 2021 or actually 22 Red Colin Moran at Doran Park in Bourne, which was fantastic. And, you know, from there, met folks and led to my first job in minor league baseball in 2014, working for Brewers affiliate, the old Brevard County Manatees, which are now a defunct franchise. But, you know, that was, you know, my introduction to the industry. And thankfully, through the connections there, I've been able to hop from place to place. And you know, I'm going to keep doing this until they stop writing the checks.
There you go. No doubt. You know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that, you know, you some freelancing in the off season, and I know you do Army women's basketball, right?
Yeah.
Which I find interesting because, you know, I had this thought when I was in college. I thought I was on the road getting ready, you know, I'd applying to law schools, and that was the idea. And then I thought, you know what, maybe I need to try this other thing that in my whole life has been something that, you know, I was interested in before I go and do that. And so I did an internship for a year with Virginia Sports Radio Network, and the flagship station in Charlottesville, Virginia. And one of the things I did was play-by-play and color for a number source, but women's basketball is the one where I got to do all the games, basically. I would fill in on some others. I did pre-game, post-game stuff for the men's basketball team, who they weren't as good back then as they are now, but and I did some baseball as well. But traveling with the women's team and being able my first shot at actual play-by-play, I realized how hard it was, number one. I realized that it was a long, hard road ahead of me if I wanted to keep doing it, but it also gave me appreciation for the women's game that I did not have before then, because Virginia at that time were really good in women's basketball, and they're getting back that way, I hope. But anyway, so that's sort of an entirely different things here. Women's basketball versus minor league baseball. And do you enjoy, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, variety, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do. I think, you know, my two passion sports are definitely baseball and basketball. Those are the two sports I played the most growing up. You know, baseball, it was the sport I was the best at out of the two of them. But basketball was really the first sport, believe it or not, that I fell in love with. You know, my dad played pickup basketball until right up until the pandemic started. My grandfather, my late grandfather, played college basketball with Red Holzman at City College in New York, who was the head coach of the Knicks when they won their two NBA titles. And I still have vivid memories of the one NBA game I ever got to go with him. And Grant Hill was playing for the Pistons back before he got hurt. And he was, you know, watch Grant Hill, watch the way he plays the game. That's, you know, the right way to do it and all that kind of stuff. And so I've always had a deep passion for basketball, along with baseball. And, you know, I've been grateful to work at West Point these last couple of years with the women's team. And it's such an amazing experience working there, not only just, you know, being around my basketball team on a consistent basis and, you know, traveling with them and being around them, but just seeing what life is like at the U.S. Military Academy. I never even realized, you know, I grew up only about an hour or so away from there. And I never really realized how close it was until I took the job at West Point. And one of the most amazing things about it is, you know, you get this idea growing up outside of, you know, for the most part, military, you know, family. You know, my grandfather served for, you know, in three different wars in you know, the Air Force and the Army Air Corps in World War II. But, you know, you get this idea of, you know, what, you know, soldiers are like, and you get a chance to be around these girls. And if you didn't know they represented, you know, Army West Point and the U.S. Military Academy, you just imagine they were regular 18 to 22 year old girls. You know, they're just as, you know, silly and goofy and, you know, like any other, you know, class of, you know, basketball players in any other school in the country, they can just kill you. so, you know, it's been kind of crazy, you know, going on, you know, traveling on flights with them to different places. And like, you know, you feel like you're on the safest flight in the country because you've got, you know, 20 some odd cadets, you know, flying alongside you in the cabin and stuff like that. So it's been amazing to meet the different people from the officers that work with the program to the players themselves. You know, it's just a special group, and getting a chance to not only go there, but to see the folks at the Naval Academy. I know Scott Strassmeyer there is a massive Reds fan, and we've sort of bonded over the Reds, despite our Army Navy rivalry and Air Force as well. Just a beautiful campus there too. So it's been an amazing experience to get to see that. And it was also very special to see getting to call a couple of his games at West Point. I was very disappointed he wasn't on our opening day roster before he got moved up last year. But Jacob Hurtubise, being in the Reds organization, AA Chattanooga, getting to see him at West Point and watching him play center field there. And I was like, this dude's going to play, you know, pro ball. This kid's got it. And when the Reds signed him, it was an awesome thing to see. And obviously rooting for him for more reasons than one.
Yeah, no question about it. You touched on something that I read a lot about actually in the last couple of weeks, because, you know, around Veterans Day, a lot of D1 teams were playing these special, you know, Michigan State and Gonzaga played on the aircraft carrier. And I read a couple of pieces that said essentially that I think a Houston coach, Kelvin Sampson, was quoted in one and said, I'll do this every day if I can. He went back in the offseason after doing it last time just to tour. He said, And they say for the kids on their teams, seeing these kids who are, they weren't playing against, Army, Navy, anyone, but they were surrounded by it. They went on tours of the place. They were introduced to it. And all the kids came away, all the players came away affected, like, whoa, what they're learning is a little different than what we're learning. And it's a really impactful thing. So it's interesting that you're getting to see that and experience it.
Yeah, no, it really is a totally different experience. One of the cool things, we had a coaching change a couple years ago. Our previous coach, Dave McGarity, was a legend who actually coached at Marist in men's basketball for many, many years, then became the Army women's coach after Maggie Dixon tragically passed away. But, you know, he did an amazing job of helping cultivate the program while I was there. And one of the cool things I saw was actually, UConn's women's team, he has a relationship with Gino Auriemma. You know, they didn't get a chance to play against one another, but UConn came to the campus, toward, West Point, and, the teams interacted with one another and things like that. And shortly before my first year working there, obviously Mike Krzyzewski still has an incredible relationship with the people at West Point. I've heard nothing but wonderful things about, Coach K, and, anything Army and West Point asks of him, he does with open arms, which is incredible. And, it's just so special because when they were training, I think for the 16 Olympics or something like that, they came to West Point and had training camp, and, the Army women's team and the Army men's team, are out there, on practice with Steph Curry and James Harden, and getting to, talk to some of the girls on that team from that year, my first year, about that experience. It's things that, they're going to carry with them for life. And I think those players, still remember finally from their experience as well. So it's always amazing to see, when both sides come away with really positive and wonderful memories of those experiences.
It's probably my fault, but I didn't warn you ahead of time. We have a strict policy that I don't allow Coach K to be mentioned on this show.
I was wondering that with your Virginia ties when I said that. I was like, is Chad going to kill me for mentioning Coach K?
But that's all right. He's retired, so I'll have to forgive and forget, I guess. But
absolutely. Well, I guess you get the last laugh because Virginia's won a more recent national title.
That's true. It is true. Let's get back to baseball here, if we could. What has been your favorite, or maybe a couple of favorites if you can't pick one, but favorite stadium that you've broadcasted in during your time in the minor leagues?
In the minor leagues, I've been very blessed to broadcast from a lot of different places. When I was working in the Southern League, there were so many really cool spots. MGM Park in Biloxi opened up when I was working in the Southern League with the Tennessee Smokies. Right there on the Gulf, got the Beau Rivage Casino out beyond right field was unbelievably beautiful. And getting to see a lot of those places, like I would have never expected to visit, as a kid growing up in the New York City area, Mobile, Alabama was a really cool place, before, their team ultimately got, taken away, unfortunately, but, Birmingham, Alabama, Regents Field was incredibly gorgeous. Out there as well. I really enjoyed my experience there. Calfee Park in Pulaski, Virginia, also incredibly gorgeous. The Yankees had a facility there for a number of years. And it was funny, I was working actually a game at William & Mary last weekend, actually, as a matter of fact, ended up having a full conversation about Appalachian League baseball and Pulaski, Virginia, with somebody who worked for one of the other schools that the Army men's team was playing against. So it's cool seeing those connections everywhere. But those were some of the favorite spots that come to my mind. But obviously also very cool working in the Florida State League. You're going to all the spring training sites, George M. Steinbrenner Field, Clover Park, the Twins facility down in Fort Myers is absolutely, fantastic. The Pirates Stadium down in Bradenton, just go on and on. Clearwater with the Phillies is incredible. But I've also been very lucky that, in my college career, got to do some games at I got to do a Penn State football game at MetLife Stadium, got to do an Army women's game for Madison Square Garden, which was incredible.
Wow.
And I guess sort of, to tie it all back to baseball, was my last Penn State student broadcast was Penn State's first bowl game back after the bowl ban, which was the Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium. So I can't say I've called a game from Yankee Stadium, albeit it was football, but that was still one of those moments you don't forget.
What year was that?
2014.
Okay. So was it new Yankee Stadium or old Yankee Stadium?
It was new Yankee Stadium, Penn State against Boston College.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's incredible. That's something that you don't have to, you can leave out the detail that it wasn't baseball because who cares? You get the broadcast.
Exactly. The game. You know, got to wander around.
Yeah. That's fantastic. That's amazing. Let's let me just say here, I was you were talking about all these places, and I've seen some of them, I've not seen others, those that I want to go to. You threw me for a loop. I did not expect that Pulaski, Virginia was going to come out of this conversation. I was actually born in Pulaski County, Virginia, and they're the Pulaski Braves there for years. Then, of course, it was the Yankees.
But that was the conversation I had with the guy down there, the Pulaski Braves. You remember seeing David Justice play down there in Virginia back in the day? And you know, it's just it's amazing. That's been part of the fun part about traveling around, working in minor league baseball is, you end up having all these connections to these different places, across the United States and things like that. And it's, always fun to be able to make those different connections with people for various different reasons. And this weekend it was Pulaski, Virginia.
I miss that Appalachian League. All my family lives in the Appalachian League footprint. And when the Reds came back, they'd been in Princeton, West Virginia years ago, had a team in the Appalachian League. And when they came back with Greenville, I was, we were all excited, and I got a chance to get down to Greenville a few times. Best stadium in the, it's at Tusculum College, I think.
Yeah, Tusculum University, Pioneer Park. That's also one of the, absolutely beautiful ballparks. I've had the broadcast, got the broadcast from Smoky Stadium and Jackie Robinson Ballpark in Daytona too. I mean, I've been blessed with some home ballparks.
That's fantastic. All right. There's a couple of things I wanted to mention. Let me see. I read somewhere and I can't find it now, but there was evidently a game and it might've been when you were with the Smokies, by the way, I love the Smokies Park as well. We've been there many, many times. When they used to take the kids down there to Sevierville, Tennessee, and to all that mess, but great park. But there was some time when a lightning storm or something happened. Is this ringing any bells with you?
Yes, it does vaguely sound familiar. Was it about a rain delay?
Well, I think there was a. I've got it here somewhere. Here we go. Let's see. No, this is actually might have been in Mobile, Alabama. Hank Aaron Stadium. A bolt of lightning struck near the team clubhouse, and
yes, okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. In Mobile, Alabama, working with the Tennessee Smokies, was helping my boss Mick Gillespie down there at old Hank Aaron Stadium, and a whole lightning storm came rolling through there. And Buddy Bailey, who's one of the all-time leading minor league wins leaders in terms of managers, was standing out there in right field. I think like the lightning bolt smashed near the clubhouse behind the outfield or by the scoreboard out there. And I was up in the press box at the time, and I guess there's a whole bunch of metal up with the press box there as well. And since it was an older ballpark, wasn't ADA accessible, so you had to go down the staircase and sort of exposed. And one of the broadcasters there at the time, who's had a fantastic career, her name is Melanie Newman. She is obviously now with the Orioles and has done great stuff with the MLB Network and Apple TV. But she came up to the press box to save me from potentially getting electrocuted or God knows what. Up high in the bowels of old Hank Aaron Stadium in Mobile, Alabama. So that is my experience with lightning. But one of the other stories I was thinking with the Smokies was a couple of during one of those years, I think it was probably the same season, CBS Sports Network was doing some national games of the week in minor league baseball. And so they used our booth. We broadcasted outside from the Calhoun's Pavilion in left field. And sure enough, in like the fourth inning, a massive rainstorm comes and the game gets, canceled or whatever. But during the rain delay, both teams' bullpens never went inside. And this video is still on YouTube of the Smokies and the Mississippi Braves bullpens, like just going back and forth with these like almost like mini skits that they were using each other. Like one was like pretending to be like bowling pins, another was like doing like duck, duck, goose. And it all ended with both teams in this torrential downpour meeting at center field for like a rock, paper, scissors match to like, quote unquote, determine who won the game. It ended up being, a great example of what minor league baseball is all about, guys. You know, it was probably not the smartest thing in the world to do. I'm sure the Cubs and Braves were not happy that their pitchers sat out there in the rain, but they made some memories for fans, and I'm going to remember that one forever.
That's fantastic. Let's circle back to the Reds for a moment here. And I do want to talk. We have to talk about Ellie De La Cruz because he obviously passed through. Let me ask this question first before, and the answer may be Ellie De La Cruz. I'll let you say, but who is the best player that you best Reds prospect, best Reds player you've seen come through that you've been able to broadcast?
I mean, it's absolutely Ellie. I mean, I've been blessed to got to be with Jonathan India for quite a bit of his first couple of years after he got drafted, came with us to Greenville, and then got to be with him through most of the 2019 season. Jose Barrero was so much fun that 2019 season as well. I wish he stayed in the organization, but Josiah Jojo Gray in 2018 in Greenville was a load of fun. I'm so thrilled to see Michael Ciani get up there in the big leagues. He was part of that 2018 Greenville team as well. But Ellie is just on another level. I mean, he might be the best, prospect I've ever, been able to call games for. And I was, with the Smokies, with Schwarber and Contreras and some of these other guys that were part of that team that won the World Series. And, he's just unbelievable. I mean, I'll never forget, the first couple of days and, he joined the roster. You look up the stats, what he was doing in, the Arizona League and, the Complex League. And you're wondering like, okay, this kid's got some, great numbers. Try and do some research and, pull up Baseball America and MLB Pipeline and any sort of, website that would have some sort of maybe scouting report or insight into this prospect that's, putting up these crazy numbers as a young kid. And there's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. I remember texting Doug Gray and going like, do you know anything about this guy? I'm texting scouts. Like, do you know anything about this guy? And Doug texted me back and I still have the screenshot somewhere saying, you're going to be the first to tell us. We know nothing. And I remember there Bradenton's in town. I'm sitting preparing for the game and I'm hearing these loud cracks during Tortuga's batting practice. And I look down to see something that looks like this pencil hitting bombs off the batting cages in left field. And I was like, That can't be this kid. Like, there's no way. And sure enough, it was. And by four games in, I was like, how did nobody, like, how is this kid falling under the radar? This kid's unbelievable. Right. And I think my favorite part about Ellie and about the whole experience with him was what I loved about Barrero and what I loved about India and what I loved about Josiah Gray when I was with him in Greenville and so many of these other guys was he's just a great kid. He wants to get better. He knows he's gifted. I remember when they came out with like new prospect rankings that year and he wasn't in the top 100. And I was like, this list is erroneous. He's not on the top 100 list. And, even though, he's still young, basically telling me, I can't remember if he told me in Spanish or English, but something along those like, patience, it's coming, like I'm going to continue working. It's going to happen. And, here we are. About a year and a half or so later. And, when all these prospect rankings are going to come up with the top 100 come around February, March, he's going to be in the top 10 and he probably should be in the top five, if not higher than that. So he's special on the field. But if he can continue to be that person he was in the summer of 2021, off the field. And I think he is based on being able to interact with him a little bit through social media and stuff like that, over the year, the sky is the limit and you just hope he stays healthy. And that was so much fun. I will never forget that summer.
Yeah, well, and hopefully the legend will continue growing and growing and growing, and it'll certainly continue to stand out in your mind. That's an interesting point that we talk about some here, but, you know, in past years, we've had a relationship with some of the Reds minor leaguers. We've talked, on and off the air. But one thing that always stuck out is that there's sometimes a pretty wide variance between the players that are really putting the work in and the players that maybe hadn't had to put in the work too much until they got there and struggled a little bit to put that the actual day-to-day work. And we see Joey Votto on a daily basis, and Joey Votto was a great player, but I firmly believe that Joey Votto became a Hall of Famer rather than just a good player because Joey Votto took it so seriously every day, put the work in, and decided he wanted to be the best player he could be. Now, not everyone can be obsessive like Joey Votto maybe, but it's encouraging to hear that, for at least from your experience with Ellie De La Cruz, you got that great talent, but when you combine that with a work ethic, that's where you get a star, you know, rather than
absolutely.
Just a garden variety
absolutely.
Good player.
And, you know, I think, you know, with a lot of the different guys that are sort of bubbling in the organization that, you know, have drawn people's attention, I think that has been a common trait. I think one of my favorite parts of, you know, the early part of last season, before I even knew who Ellie was hearing Reese Hines and Tyler Callahan talking our pregame, our preseason, press conference about, you know, work being at the alternate site in 2020, and the guy that sort of helped, the guys that helped bring them under their wing and taught them how to be pros and how to, attack minor league baseball life was Christian Colon, who had a World Series ring, and Jonathan India, who hadn't even made his major league debut yet. And when I heard that, it made it that rookie of the year season make so much sense. You know, he was, you know, being that kind of leader off the field for the younger players, the guys that were going to continue to follow him, even though he hadn't even stepped onto a major league diamond yet with a Reds uniform on. I felt that same way about, you know, you talk about the University of Virginia and Andrew Abbott and the kind of guy he was working with him the tail end of that same season. And even this year in Daytona Beach, you know, obviously the record wasn't necessarily what you would have liked to see, but the talent there, you know, particularly guys like Jay Allen and the guys that came through there, same sort of, you know, makeup in terms of, you know, wanting to be better on the field, but also carrying themselves extremely well off the field. And that, you know, from a fan's perspective, I love that. And from someone who works with them, just makes it so encouraging and hopeful for what's to come, hopefully in the next couple of years in Cincinnati.
Yeah. You've encouraged me a little bit, certainly, because that, I don't know. I can't wait to get to see Ellie De La Cruz every single day. And it's hopefully going to be this year. I don't know. You know, I imagine he's probably going to start in Double A this year, but is my guess, or he may start in Triple A actually. But I expect there'll be an opportunity. It's not like there's a whole lot of guys ahead of him at the big league level. So they don't need to rush him. They need to make sure he's developed. And I'll have to trust him to do that. But his ETA is sooner rather than later. That's pretty exciting for Reds fans.
Yeah, I would imagine, you know, if, like I said, if he can stay healthy, I think I would be stunned if he's not, you know, making his major league debut sometime this summer. I wouldn't be shocked if he starts in Double A just to start the season, but I can see it be sort of one of those, you know, you start the season there, he, you know, goes back to tearing the cover off the ball like he was at the tail end of last season, quickly bump him up to Triple A, and then, then the fun sort of starts beginning of, you know, counting down the days until, you know, that moment comes where, you know, he's packing the crowds at Great American Ballpark and, you know, hopefully being that bastion of hope that everyone, you know, hopefully isn't putting too much pressure on him to be, but, right. But obviously you can't ignore it either.
As a Reds fan, we need some reason to hope.
I hope dearly that he is the guy because he deserves to be the guy for more reasons than one.
If you're watching on YouTube, you've probably seen me this whole episode looking around, trying to find something. Justin's seen me doing that. What's he doing over there? And the answer is that we're in the process of getting our house ready to sell. And not too long ago, I found something as I was going through boxes that I had no idea I still had. And I finally found it. I wanted to show it to you. Here's my media credential for the 1996 women's ACC basketball tournament.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
down at Rock Hill, South Carolina, and, you know, flew down with the team, but they just, I don't know. It was fun. So,
hey, that's a great memento. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I couldn't believe I still had that. So that was pretty wild. So I'm going to wear it. Actually,
that's fantastic.
You're not the only member of the media. Here.
Absolutely, man. It goes well. You got the Reds hat, you got the red sweatshirt, and you got that's the red credentials. Perfect. It was meant to be.
There we go. Unfortunately, Wendy Palmer and the University of Virginia Cavaliers went down to defeat that day in the first round of the tournament. But anyway, back to the Reds. Anyone else that you've seen that you think might be underrated a little bit? And this is an unfair question. I probably should have given you a heads up on that. But is there anyone that just jumps out and says, oh, this is a guy that is interesting to me that I've watched
Years? There definitely is quite a few guys. I mean, it was really great to see. You know, I remember watching him in 2019, and now he's, you know, had begun to make a name for himself in Alejo Lopez. I was so thrilled with him. I loved seeing Stuart Fairchild have the success he had at the tail end of last season. Those are two guys in 2019 that I was very high on. But, you know, 2021, there were so many, you know, interesting guys that came through that team in terms of talent. You know, relief prospects like Stevie Branch and Vin Timpanelli and guys who, you know, maybe had a little bit of, you know, ups and downs during their second season in minor league ball last year. But the raw stuff is absolutely there. That was incredibly encouraging. Daniel Vejohin, as a catcher, he has, you know, quite a bit of skill. I think if he can find ways to, you know, continue to improve offensively and be a better blocker of pitches in the dirt. Defensively, he's got a cannon of an arm, a game changer in terms of limiting what opposing teams would do in terms of stealing, considering all the rule changes in 2021 in what was, you know, really the Florida State League to try and help increase base stealing. And he still threw out, you know, about 45% or whatever the number was of base stealers during the course of that season. So he was incredibly encouraging. And, you know, there's quite a bit of guys underneath there that, you know, sort of under the radar that didn't, you know, obviously I'm a big Jay Allen fan. One of the things that I was always impressed with him, and I think it's a really good point that Eric Davis made when I was talking to him at one point during the summer, is, you know, he had his ups and downs during the course of his first full minor league season, but this is the most baseball he'd ever played in his life. I mean, he was going from playing quarterback in football, as soon as football season was over, going to playing basketball. You know, was a great, you know, guard forward on his high school basketball team. And then basketball season was over, and then he was, you know, playing center field on the baseball diamond. So, you know, this is, you know, the most baseball he's played consecutively. So, you know, there's going to be some growing pains that come with that kind of experience. But I was incredibly encouraged by him. And then when you think back to pitching this year, Julian Aguiar was fantastic for us in Daytona Beach before he moved up to Dayton at the end of the season. Jose Franco, was always encouraged by him. He's got really great strikeout stuff. If he can find consistency on a performance-to-performance basis, he's somebody who could really open some eyes and rise quickly. But there's a bunch of under the radar talent down there, you know, in Daytona Beach this past couple of years, that, you know, could potentially be, you know, of significance in Cincinnati in the next couple of years.
Well, we need some players in Cincinnati. So I'm going to run quickly here through the news of the week. Not a lot of news of the week. We'll talk about a little bit more. We have a couple of questions that we'll try to answer. Maybe we can dig into this a little bit more, but not a whole lot to discuss. The one big thing from Reds' perspective is the guy named Farmer, right? The Cincinnati Reds signed Buck Farmer, relief pitcher, for the 2023 season, $1.75 million. But that's not the Farmer that everyone in Cincinnati is talking about. Yeah, it's a different one. It's the Reds traded Kyle Farmer to the Minnesota Twins. The Reds are getting back some guy whose name I can't pronounce, who's, I think, 20.
Casey Legumina.
There we go. You know something about him?
I've seen him pitch in Fort Myers. I want to say I may have even seen him pitch maybe an Elizabethan in the Appy League as well. But he throws really hard. He's got some good, qualities in terms of his breaking pitch. You know, he's going to be, somewhat of a lottery pick in that sense. But, if Derek Johnson and company can, work some magic, he could be a big bullpen piece for them, potentially. I would imagine they hope to see him make his debut sometime this coming year.
You would think so. He's 25 years old. And if you can get a potentially useful piece out of trading Kyle Farmer, then that's a pretty good piece of business given where the Reds are in this cycle, I guess. We had one question about this. Comes from our friend. All these questions come from our friends at our Patreon family, patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. Kyle Kapler asked this question. Are there people who are actually upset about trading a 32-year-old utility infielder who owns a career 85 OPS plus? Now, I liked a lot of things Kyle Farmer did. We sometimes were critical of him because I thought he was given too much credit because he was gritty or something. He was there every day and he worked his tail off. He did everything you could ever ask of any player for the Cincinnati Reds. And so I wish him the best. I hope he does well in Minnesota. I have nothing bad to say about Kyle Farmer, except he is what he is. And I'm afraid some people kind of lost sight of what he is and tried to make him out to be more than he is, which is maybe not fair to him. But I tweeted something, which, first of all, never tweet. That's always the best course of action. Yeah.
As another person in the media industry, never tweet.
Yeah, definitely. Don't tweet. Nothing good comes of it. But I tweeted out what turned out to be the perfect Rorschach test of Cincinnati Reds fans. I was trying to be sarcastic and talk about all the overhype around Kyle Farmer. And I tweeted out something like, just like the Reds trading away their best player, and half the people.
There's no sarcasm font on Twitter, unfortunately.
Exactly. And about half the people understood the sarcasm because they followed me for more than one day. But there were about maybe not half the responses, but there were a large number of responses that were very earnest and very, very serious because they really love Kyle Farmer, which, more power to you. But the answer to your question, Kyle, is yes, there were a lot of people that were upset about the Reds trading Kyle Farmer.
I think there's a great point you made there, though, about Kyle Farmer in that sense, and the fact that I think he's a perfect example of a guy that you're absolutely right, worked his tail off. And I think he got every bit of ounce of, what he could possibly give to the Cincinnati Reds. He gave it to them every time he put that uniform on. And, I think you're right. Sometimes, that stuff gets a little bit lost in translation because you appreciate that effort that he gave in 110% every time. You never had to doubt that Kyle Farmer was given his best. But there's also a bunch of talented middle infielders in the system that that when the Reds are going to, be the big red machine again, it's more likely those are going to be the guys that are in the lineup every day.
Yeah, absolutely. My position with Kyle Farmer has always been, look, he's a perfectly cromulent utility guy. Would love to have him on my team if he's kind of playing four different positions. You can play him 4 or 5 days a week and get him around the line, around the diamond. And he's going to be, he's going to help it. He can help a good team.
He can absolutely be a really good utility player on a postseason run team. Like, there's no reason he can't be, a 10th or 11th guy on a team that makes a postseason and World Series kind of run. He's just not a starting shortstop on that team.
Yeah, starting shortstop, cleanup hitter, like he's been in Cincinnati often, which is, again, that's not Kyle Farmer's fault. And people want to get mad at Kyle Farmer. Right.
He's worked himself into what's turning into a pretty darn good career. And I echo those sentiments exactly. I wish him the best of luck in Minnesota. I hope Casey Legomina comes over and, rips the cover off the ball in terms of throwing it towards a home plate and towards being a big part of the Reds bullpen. And I think, there's no harm in that trade. I think it opens the door for exactly what we were talking about before with Ellie De La Cruz. I think that's, a major part of that decision. I'm wishing Kyle the best of luck. He gave everything he could in Cincinnati. He was fun to watch when he was out there. That's for sure.
Yeah. He kind of became a little bit of a punching back, not the right word, but just because anytime
lightning rod.
That's the term. Yeah. Because anytime I would say anything that I felt like was just being honest about him, which was not even critical, it was just, he is who he is. He's, you know, he's a below average hitter. He's can play a bunch of different positions. He's a major leaguer. It's not, you know, he saw him as this cleanup hitter. And because he's that kind of guy that since they always like, he got overrated a little bit, but I'm always hesitant when I talk about him, not to criticize, because he is who he is.
In a perfect world, maybe, you know, 5-6 years, you know, maybe that's too long, you know, maybe hopefully, you know, this, you know, the organization continues to trend in the right direction with these prospects coming up, and maybe he comes back in a couple of years, and, you know, when the Reds are maybe ready for a playoff run, you know.
Yeah,
in a perfect world, I think that's, you know, going to come back and return as a hero once again.
Well, I'm not sure that it's going to happen while he's still young enough to play Major League Baseball, but he's a guy that if the Reds had been good these last 2 or 3 years, would have been one of my favorite players, because he wouldn't have been put in a position that he wasn't really capable of. But he'd have been a guy that you could fill in, and again, you like the attitude, the effort, the exuberance, the grit.
Yeah, so, and you know what? I'll try and be as optimistic as possible. Reds fans have always been incredibly welcoming to me. Being a New York, New Jerseyan who's been covering the team in Tennessee and Florida and different parts of that. So if I can bring at least any little positivity I can, I'm going to try and do it, because you guys have been great to me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for that, because unfortunately, I forget sometimes. This is supposed to be fun. It's baseball, yeah. You know?
Absolutely. It is supposed to be fun, but life throws us off a curve, huh?
Sometimes. Other news of the week, the Reds traded a relief pitcher, Dari Moretta, to the Pirates. They got infielder Kevin Newman back. Kevin Newman, 29 years old, essentially seems an awful lot like Kyle Farmer. So, okay, fine, whatever.
Former Cape League batting champion when I was there. 2013 Thurman Munson Cape League batting champion.
Is that right?
Commodores, absolutely. So best of luck to Kevin coming over. Cincinnati, hopefully he finds, you know, that same magic Kyle did when he came over from the Dodgers. And sad to see it never really worked out for Dowry and Cincinnati, because I loved him in 2019 in Daytona Beach. He was a great part of that team. Was a hugely successful reliever. And my only regret with him in Cincinnati is I wish they called him up earlier in 2021.
Yeah. When they should have. We were saying that here. Yeah, we don't have a bullpen. He's lights out. Give him a shot. What's it going to hurt? Yeah, maybe a change of scenery. I'm hopeful for him, because he does have a live arm, and I would love to see him be successful, just not against the Reds. But we'll be seeing him in the future, perhaps. With Newman, I think the thing might be, you know, he can be Kyle Farmer without being quote-unquote Kyle Farmer, which is, you know, you can play him different places. He can be your utility guy or whatever. You can stick him in here and there, and nobody's going to expect more of him.
I think that's exactly probably what they're thinking of. And, you know, he's shown some hitting qualities in the minor leagues. You know, maybe something clicks in Cincinnati this year. You know, I hope for Reds fans, and I hope for Kevin that's the case.
Well, he'll get a shot, because the Reds have, like, I think, 7 players on their 40-man roster, I believe. 7 players. No, that's not quite accurate. They have 40. Other things this week, Nick Senzel season, you know, he broke his toe at the end of the season, and so he did have surgery this week because the toe was not healing properly, but evidently it was a successful surgery, and he's expected to be ready for spring training. I don't know if you have any comments on Nick Senzel.
Just another guy. I feel terrible for, and the dude, you know, I feel like he's another guy that's, you know, somewhat in the same bane of Kyle Farmer's, that has tried to give every single thing he possibly can. He's been third baseman, second baseman, center fielder, you know, shortstop. He'll, you know, he's basically played every position except for, you know, left bench and catcher. And, I find, like, every day it's a new story with him, you know, with an injury or, you know, he's, you know, had to go under the knife or, you know, different kind of rehab. And you just, you know, I remember being in Knoxville working for the Smokies when the Reds drafted him number 2 in 16. And just, I really hope he can for his sake, you know, because I know he's working his tail off to be out there on the field for his teammates. And he's tried everything to be the best, you know, teammate and player for the Reds he can be. It's just his body has not held up his end of the bargain.
Well, I won't say much else, because every time I mention Senzel here. Everyone rolls their eyes. All the viewers roll their eyes because I've been touting Senzel for a long time. And yeah, it's been sad to watch. And so I don't know, hopefully, I keep saying hopefully.
Yeah. You know, that's all, I mean, that, and that's in situation. It's all you sort of, you can do, just hope, you know, that he can stay healthy and something clicks and you know, you see what everyone, you know, knows was possible.
Yep. All right, let's try to run through a few. We just have a couple questions, then we'll get out of here. See if we, and we may not be able to get to all of them, but we'll let's see what looks like here. The first one's going to come from Adam Foskey. Adam, I owe you a position on the Beer League softball team. Justin, I'll explain to you later what that means, but we'll do that next week. Adam, we'll assign your position, but we'll go ahead and try to answer your question here. Is there any player on the current Reds roster that you see the Reds extending before 2024? So essentially, you know, after next season, like Stevenson, India, Green, Lodolo. After next year, the Reds payroll significantly drops with big money off the books, Votto and Mike Moustakas. And then it's a plaintive cry here. The Reds won't be the new A's or Pirates, right? I don't know what the correct answer here is. I would never bet on the Reds signing anyone long-term. I think that if they really truly, like Justin was saying, if they really truly believe they're that close to having some of these guys start infiltrating a big league clubhouse, then it's a good time to start thinking about Tyler Stevenson is the first one that I would try to extend. Of course, you have the injury concerns with him, but when he's on the field, the guy is just, he's unbelievable. He's a star. You know, India, I don't know. I'd like to see more after what happened. The injuries caused a sort of a slump in his second year, but he was looking better at the end of the season. I think we're likely to see something closer to his rookie year next year with India. Not concerned about him yet. Yeah. Well, do you want to sign him to a long term? Maybe if you think that the Reds are close enough to do that, now might be the best time to try to get him after sort of a down year, you know?
The best way, I mean, the shining example of it has been, you know, you don't have to, you know, look that far down south from Virginia, not that far north from Daytona Beach. I mean, the Braves have done an amazing job of keeping their young guys that have gone up there to the major league level and, you know, kept them for conceivably under budget. I mean, obviously they've had a lot more on field success, but if that's, you know, if Lodolo and Green and Ashcraft and India and Stevenson and Ellie and all these guys fulfill what we all think they can be, then that's to me the, you know, the way to go. I mean, they found ways to seemingly get guys at crazy discounts.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's the move. The difference, I guess, right now is that the Braves have been competitive and they're trying to win, whereas last year and this year the Reds are not trying to win. But at some point, presumably, they are going to be trying to win, and so they've got this sort of stable. You know, Hunter Green, you want to take a chance on the arm. Nick Lodolo, pitchers are. But still, if you can get those guys for a, you know, a few extra years, buy out a couple other free agent years maybe, and get them at a decent rate, you have to at some point start thinking that. I just don't know if it's going to be.
I think that could be like something that happens. I think maybe, you know, randomly, and maybe that's just me trying to be overly optimistic. You know, Lodolo or Green or you know, India, you know, has, you know, India bounces back to what he was in 21 and maybe even beyond, and Lodolo and Green take the next steps, you know, to prove that, you know, they are the 1-2 punch at the top of the rotation, you know, for the next decade. Then, you know, if they show that by, you know, from the start of the season to, you know, July 31st, then might be worth taking a swing at it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, something that is going to also play into this, I think, is we sort of had this discussion in our Patreon group. We have a Slack channel, and we had this discussion this past week, and several people were making the point that I actually agree with 100%, which is that the Reds are highly, they're not good, but they are highly unlikely to lose 100 games again next year. They just had this big confluence of events with all these injuries, everyone injured, and just maybe it'll happen again, but probably not. They had everything go wrong that could have gone wrong, and they lost 100 games. That's probably not going to happen next year. Hopefully you get a full season of India. Hopefully a somewhat full season of Stevenson. You know, you have Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, and Alexis Diaz a year under their belt. Graham Ashcraft. And so,
shout out 2018 Greenville Reds, Alexis Diaz.
There you go. So you're the reason he's so good. We're going to give you credit.
I'll take the credit. I will say, I remember watching him pitch that summer and said, you know, he's got something. He reminded me a lot of his brother with his moment, with his motion, and I was so happy to see him do what he did in the bullpen.
Yeah, he's the real deal.
He deserves it. It's crazy to think, you know, 2018 Appalachian League, and, you know, getting to meet you and Doug Gray, and to think, you know, like four or five guys from that team, rookie ball 4 years ago, are big leaguers now. And, you know, it's not a mistake. That's pretty cool.
Well, and that's why we can hope and dream that maybe in the near future, because some of these young guys are doing well, moving their way up the system. And you have to give credit to the Reds organization, certainly for that. So if things don't go as bad as they did last year, you don't have to squint too hard to say, oh, what if they lose 89 games? Okay, well, that's a big improvement. So now you can start saying, oh, the Reds can maybe start thinking, all right, so now we start plugging some of these holes, sign some of these guys, and you're not that far from having a competitive team. You know, you had, it took 85 wins to get into the playoffs, you know.
Yeah, you slice 11 losses off 89, that's 78. You got a winning record at that point, and then all bets are off.
Right. So that's the sort of glass half full scenario, but I don't think it's completely unrealistic. I won't trust Reds ownership and management to do it until they do it, but there is a path. There is a path. So, let's see. Rich Thompson has a good question for us. Gentlemen, what's your favorite Reds minor league affiliate uniform? You going with the Tugas?
I'm very biased. I mean, I think our color scheme and our logos, our uniforms, what we've continued to do is amazing. I love it. Our home jerseys, our home white jerseys are so clean. The grays on the road are nice. We've got these, you know, neon paradise green Copa jerseys that are going to become our full-time alternate jerseys this year. The players love them so much. You know, these dark green jerseys that, you know, have been so well, and there's all these different alternate jerseys we've created for Jackie Robinson weekend with our ballpark's history, and all these different things have been incredible, but there are a lot of really good ones. I mean, I think Louisville has done an incredible job over the last couple of years with their branding. I love the Lookout's new branding over the last number of years with the look, with the cap that's just, you know, the eyes logo, and some of the different liberties they've taken there. And Dayton also, it obviously does a remarkable job with their uniforms day in, day out. I mean, I think I'm obviously biased, but there is a hard press to have a better organization top to bottom in terms of minor league branding, from AAA down to Single A. So I love it all. Obviously, I'm biased. I think we're the best in Daytona, but I love everybody in the organization, and that's not me being facetious.
No, that's where we'll go. That's the answer. Although I will give an honorable mention to you. You mentioned him, but all the way back in high school, which was many moons ago, I had a Chattanooga Lookouts hat, and just I love that logo. And I need to get a new one of those because it's just
I do too.
Yeah. Joey Gaditza, as much as I'd love to see the Reds go get Cody Bellinger, I presume he's talking about probably not his dad, Clay. Safe to say he isn't coming to Cincinnati, correct? They'd have to spend money to get him. Now, the answer is no, probably not. But man, if you could go get that guy, he fell completely off the. This is a guy that was rookie of the year at age 23. He's the most valuable player in the National League, and just he'll be 27 next year, and he just
enigma.
I don't understand it. I mean, you know, his power's gone down. He's been swinging at pitches out of the zone a little bit. There's some injuries, you know, shoulder, leg injuries that may have caused.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it feels like, you know, like that whole thing in the 2020 playoffs or whatever, when he like injured his shoulder, you know, jumping, celebrating a home run or a catch. I don't remember what exactly, you know, it was, but like it somewhat feels like that was like a starting point. But man, you know, something just doesn't seem right. Like it makes no sense that he's fallen off this much,
right,
in such a short period of time.
Given that he's 27 years old, I expect there are going to be plenty of suitors. So I don't know that the Reds are going to want to outbid anyone, because it's a guy that if you could get him cheap, absolutely. The Reds have consistently tried to take flyers on guys that are, you know, on the cheap, and, you know, maybe turn them around and trade him at the deadline or something. But man, I would absolutely take a flyer, but no, the Reds are not going to do that, Joey. Sorry. Last question is from Seth. Seth, it's going to take a little bit of time to answer that. Please ask it again next week, but have fun at Hollywood Studios. You ever been to Hollywood Studios, Justin?
I believe I have. Back. It's been a minute since I've been there. Might need to go through some family photos to re-jog my memory, but I definitely believe I've been there in my peppered history.
There we go. Well, Seth is there now, and Seth, we'll get to your question next week. Sorry, we really need to cut out of here. Justin, is there anything I should have asked you or anything else you wanted to say?
No, I really mean what I said. I've loved being around the Reds organization these last couple of years, from people within the organization, how they've treated me, from getting to meet Nick Kroll over the summer. He was extremely nice to the players, the coaching staff, to the fans themselves, people like yourself that cover the team and things like that. I've been very lucky to be around Reds Nation these next couple of years, and I'm really hoping that the guys I've seen, like Ellie and like Reese Hines and Aguiar, and I can go on and on about so many different guys, are the pieces of the puzzle that everyone's been waiting for. And I can't wait to see what they do in the years to come.
Well, I really appreciate you giving us some of your time today. This was fun. We really need to do it again.
Yes, please, are up anytime. For that,
would love to do that. And maybe during the season, we can check in. I know you're busy during the season, but maybe we can find time to check
make
in.
Take time for you guys. Absolutely.
That'd be good to get the eyes and ears in what's going on in Single A. So I want to thank everyone for listening, watching, supporting the Riverfront. Please remember to subscribe to the show either on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, go ahead and smash that subscribe button, or wherever your favorite podcast app is, Apple, Spotify, we're everywhere. Just search for the Riverfront, or you can click the link in the show notes. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Riverfront Cincy. And once again, a huge thanks to our supporters at patreon.com/RiverfrontCincy. The show would literally not be possible without the support of our family. Come join in our hijinks if you wish. Justin, this was fun, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Chad. And thank you so much, everyone who tunes into the Riverfront. And thanks for the support down in Daytona Beach. We love it.
For the legendary Justin Rock, his first of many appearances on the show, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.